Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is David Bray, Chief Information Officer with the Federal Communications Commission. So, David, what are you doing? And you had mentioned earlier that your one of your roles is as a flap jacket and protecting your staff or giving them leeway to be not as risk averse as much of government. So what I want to get is, how are you cultivating a risk-tolerant environment that fosters innovation within your agency as respects technology and innovation?
So it's interesting to think about how risk adverse we, the public, have become. In 1908, a young ensign by the name of Ensign Nimitz ran his boat, the USS Decatur, aground in the Philippines. It was a U.S. boat. He ran a boat, and he was court-martialed but not drummed out of the Navy and assigned to submarines, and about 35 years later, you know, became a five-star admiral in charge of the Pacific Fleet and helped us win World War II. Imagine if that had happened nowadays, that, you know, it wouldn't have been an ensign, but maybe a lieutenant commander runs his boat aground in the Philippines. Not only would there be pundits on television, they would be on Twitter, fire Nimitz, I mean, but his boss and his boss's boss would probably be called, you know, before Congress. And so we've become, you know, while at the same time we have this sort of deluge of information and we become more transparent, we've also become more risk averse. And so that's an interesting tension, because I do want people to take risk. And so I have to sort of model that behavior. And so one of the things that I did when I first arrived, and it seems so simple, but I said, I'd like to have a Twitter account. And they said, well, we've never had a Twitter account for the CIO before. And I was like, well, you know, it's social media and everything like that. But I intentionally wanted one that was FCC_CIO. And the reason why was, one, to sort of hear what's going on. But then, two, I'm a big believer, if the only time people hear about IT at the FCC is when something's gone wrong, then they're going to think that's the only thing we're doing. And the reality is, we're trying to do a lot of great things, and we do have some stories to be shared. And so part of it was to actually begin to actually share that message, begin that network, so that people can understand if we take a risk, and that risk turns out that it was, you know, it was 80% likely to succeed, 20% not, and unfortunately the 20% happened. They can at least understand in the context of, this was a calculated portfolio of bets where maybe six things turned out well and the seventh thing didn't. Mm-hmm. And that's been an interesting culture shift. And the good news is, I've seen other CIOs in public service also step up to the plate. Recently, General Services Administration, GSA, created GSA_CIO, which I had to smile because theirs is in all caps. Mine's in lowercase. But anyway, you know, so I'm hoping that that will allow more of the conversation of what we're doing. But it also serves for me as a learning mechanism, because, again, the world is changing so quickly. That I can't necessarily know everything, but I can be open to the network sort of saying, here are things that you might want to consider. And so the other thing that I've done is we started blogging about what we're doing. So we blogged about our seven tracks and the three measurable goals that we're working on to try and modernize the FCC. We also shared that storyboard. One of the offices, it was the second day, came in, and I won't say the name of the product, but they said, we want X. And I said, why? And they said, well, it just came out. I said, well, could you tell me a little bit more? And so we storyboarded it. And we actually are now sharing it with industry consortiums, but we also put it on our blog site so that it's available to everybody to actually comment and actually say, here's what we want to do. You know, it's involving mobility. It's involving the field. We actually want to do telecommunications from different sites. We also want to do it securely. We want to do it in areas where maybe getting a cell signal might be really difficult, and doing a satellite might be too much latency. And so sort of just trying to figure out what's possible and just sort of see what industry says is possible, what the public says is possible. And so having that conversation, I think that helps me encourage people to take risk and actually be open to the fact that we need to experiment with other things. The other thing that I also held forward when I arrived, it turned out to be an interesting experiment that went quite well. About 5 months ago, we launched what was called the FCC Speed Test app. And this was basically a very simple app that's available. It was initially available on the Google Play Store. It's also available on iOS Store. It will test your internet connection 3 times a day, give you results, share that results with a third party, and that third party shares it with the FCC. And then the FCC turns around and makes that data available for download by the public. They can actually analyze it itself to produce the first crowdsourced map by provider of connection speeds across the country. The code is also available on GitHub. And so if people want to fork it or actually modify the code to do other things, they can. They can also make sure that, you know, it truly is treating their information as anonymous. We don't know who you are within a 5-mile radius. We don't capture your IP address. So we do protect your privacy. Now, we thought maybe 5,000-10,000 people might actually be using it. Turned out we had more than 50,000 people using it. It continues to grow. The other thing that's interesting is it was the number 4 app for a while on the iOS store, right behind Google Chrome. And so that, to me, points to a model of where in the past D.C. in particular, we've thought about, you know, D.C. is where government happens and it's something that government workers do, maybe working with contractors. And we're like, well, no, maybe we can actually engage the public directly with their consent, you know, and they can actually be a part of the sort of monitoring, part of the solution of providing information. That to me is exciting because when you think about cell phones, I mean, your smartphone, apparently the statistic is your modern day smartphone now has as much computing power that President Reagan had back in the 1980s available to him as president. And so when you think about that sort of change up, and the fact that that's now available, I mean, apparently the next 1 billion smartphone users who are new will get their smartphone for $20 or less. It's mainly in developing nations. Mm-hmm. And so how do we think about how does that change how we do representative democracy? And how do we engage the public as sort of not just sort of passive watchers of what's going on in D.C. or wherever it is and around the world, but actually participants in the actual process of informing and actually being a democratic nation. That to me is extremely exciting.
And in all of this, you have to make sure the environment in which you're operating in is secure and safe. Mm-hmm. And so that transitions to what are you doing to strengthen the FCC's IT security posture. And I'd be interested to understand a little bit more about your view of cybersecurity and culture and how they intertwine.
So at the FCC, for our internal cybersecurity, of course, we had perimeter defense. We actually, you know, we were, but that today's world, you can't just do that. You always have to have defense in depth. And so it's not just about instrumenting your network to let you know what's going on in your network that you may have some prizes, as well as monitoring what's going out, because in several times what's going out might be a signal. What we're trying to do is when we write updated code for our modernization effort with the different IT systems, can we actually say, here's how we think the code should behave? And if it doesn't behave this way, send an alert. Mm-hmm. Now, that might be that it's not a cybersecurity event. It might just be, again, the hardware fault, software bug. But it could also be that someone's trying to do something with the code that was not intended. And so, again, by going back again to those initial storyboards, if we can actually say, here's how things should operate, we can then say how things shouldn't operate and sound an alert so that a human can pay attention to it. Because the other thing that's also what keeps me up at night, you can't have everything be a human-centric process. Mm-hmm. You need to have the machines tip and cue the human to pay attention to it. And so my view on culture in cybersecurity is we've gone from an era in which we tried to apply it where if there was just enough information provided to humans, we could secure everything. And I think we need to actually invert that to we know 2013 there were 7 billion network devices on the face of the planet. All estimates point to that by before the end of 2015 there'll be 14 billion network devices on the face of the planet. So twice the number of humans on the planet. But then if you carry that forward by 2020, anywhere between 50 to 75 billion or more network devices on the face of the planet, you have to start relying on algorithms more. Which creates an interesting conundrum because, again, how do you trust the algorithm to begin with as well? But again, if we can at least have say, here's what we think the algorithm should do, and if it doesn't do that, sound an alert that someone can pay attention to it. It may be, again, hardware fault or software bug. But that actually tips and cues the humans as to what they need to pay attention to and moves us forward from the era of which we were trying to have everything just be a human problem that if they focus on it, they had enough data, they could do it, to how the machines can actually cue us to what we should pay attention to and help secure things moving forward.
David, you have a vision of positioning the FCC to become a trusted broker of data. To that end, what are you doing to transform the accessibility to FCC data? And what are some of the obstacles you may face in trying to realize this vision?
Yeah, so accessibility is extremely important. And one of the things that we've discovered is we probably need to do some improvements on our 508 compliance. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. And in fact, one of the great entrepreneurs that we have at the FCC, her name is Teresa Shea. She's actually on detail to us from NIH. She lost her sight when she was in her 20s. But if you meet her, one, she's very passionate about how IT isn't just about making things 508 compliance for the sake of 508 compliance. It's actually about if you make something that's machine readable, it actually can be actually then actually consumed by things like the Surys of the world or the Google Nows of the world or the Katanas of the world. And I think this is key because, again, we're moving from an era in which there's just this huge data explosion. I think upwards, the estimates are that by 2022, we'll have more digital information on the planet than all our eyes see in the course of a year, which is just staggering. So if you can make it so it's machine readable, it doesn't just benefit those individuals that actually may need different ways of accessing the information because of their abilities, but also then allows the machines to actually make sense of it too. The other thing we're trying to do is we're a big supporter of, again, sort of exposing those application programming interfaces, those APIs. And so I've said going forward, any effort we do to modernize will expose APIs. They will be well documented. And so by having those APIs exposed, we allow for surprises when people may actually sort of pull down our data, mix it in interesting ways, and actually reach interesting things that may inform telecommunications that we ourselves just didn't have the staff to do or have the time to do. And I think that's important, again, to represent democracy. The last thing that we're also trying to do, we are intentionally launching the ability to actually engage both internal stakeholders and external stakeholders to actually give their input. I think the interesting thing about the FCC is it really is a business-to-business. Mm-hmm. While engaging the public is important, and we hope to do that for APIs, maybe about 80-85% of what the FCC does really is with different parties, both nonprofits and for-profits. By getting those inputs and those requirements up front, and again, sort of following that same storyboard mold, we will identify the parts of both the old transition.fcc.gov website and the new part so that together going forward, we can actually sort of amplify those parts. We definitely need to have the site be responsive. Again, we are the FCC. It should show up good on a tablet and a smartphone and have it be machine readable at the same time too.
Yeah, and I was wondering with the website itself, what do you doing or how are you using the web to execute parts of the chairman's process reform?
Right.
Tell us a little about that.
Yep. So with the process reform, there are a couple of priorities that deeply involve the web. The most prominent one is with complaint reform. With complaint reform, FCC has historically had a process that involved paper forms. And you may call in or write in with a complaint. The forms would be mailed to you. You then mail back the relevant form that was appropriate to your complaint. And from then, it would be scanned and actually put in the system. And so what we want to do there is actually move towards a model where ideally it's a web-first approach, mm-hmm. where you can come in and say, here's the nature of my complaint. And it actually works you through sort of like a decision tree that actually says, well, here's the right, and we can even present the right form so you can fill it right there on the spot, form to help solve your problem. Or it might be the case that actually this is not something the Federal Communications Commission can do, but maybe it's our partners with the Federal Trade Commission or another part of a government agency, so you don't even sort of spend too much time and energy in what's actually the wrong place and where we detect you elsewhere. With the web-first approach, we do need to recognize there's still cases where people won't be able to use the web for whatever reason. And so we'll have to support the ability to actually have things come in through telephone calls. Ideally, we'll get out of the business doing paper, but there may be some exceptions where we have to do that. But it's a web-first approach. And then you can sort of, again, sort of using like the model of Amazon or UPS, you can actually track the status of your complaint. You can see where it's at. And equally, we can provide an aggregate assessment to the public as well as to our partners to say, here's the number of complaints we're receiving of this type or associated with this type of provider. And so you can actually see that publicly. You may not be able to drill down to specifics because there may be personal identifiable information with the individual complaint, but you can at least see what's the different volume and see the things that are happening there. The other thing that we've also been talking about is there's an electronic commenting filing system, which obviously has gotten a lot of popularity lately at the FCC. And so with that, we've talked about, can we provide the ability so you can actually see the number of comments that are coming in on a regular basis? We've also talked with the Bureau and actually asked them, how do you want to make sense of the different comments that are coming in? Because it's right now free text, and free text says, you know, might be a bit challenging to actually make sense of, but it's something that I think that the public would want. We do allow people to scrape, web scrape, which basically means download from the electronic commenting filing systems all the comments that have been provided, which, interesting enough, I think when we recently had an interesting sketch that highlighted the attention of the FCC with the electronic commenting filing system, we had people that are logging comments, and then a split second later were actually querying for the exact comment they just submitted, which created an interesting index demand on the commenting filing system as a whole. But we do support, and actually, believe it or not, when that event happened, we had 26 gigabytes of text information downloaded from the FCC's commenting filing system in less than 24 hours. So the good news is the public likes to engage us, particularly on issue. I mean, who would have thought 10 years ago that, you know, there would have been this demand? But the good news is we just need to modernize our systems to actually have that robust public facing. The other thing that I've also thought about is not just for the public, but also for our partners that engage us. Can they have sort of personalized dashboards so that they don't have to look through 207 different FCC systems to find the information associated with them? They can actually see a dashboard and say, show me everything associated with the different licenses I associate with television stations, radio stations, satellites. And they can actually see the different assets they have as opposed to actually having to query different systems. And so as we move forward and do a data mart, that'll make it much easier for both FCC internally to have that data, but then also expose that to the public appropriately as well.
So David, given the mission of your agency, there's a perception that's sort of internally lagging behind in innovations and the adoption thereof. How are you trying to transform that perception and actually make it a reality that you're going to be a leader in this area?
Right. You're right about the perception. And actually, I have a theory that organizations often do well externally what they do poorly internally because they put their good people on the outside. And so, the FCC was great with the advances of the internet in the 1990s. they sort of forgot to incorporate themselves in doing that. And so the way we'll sort of move that forward is by having a series of demonstrable wins, and we're really just starting that adventure. Again, the first 10 months that I've been here, it really has been focusing more on let's get virtual desktop out, let's make sure we're actually building those relationships, let's make sure we're getting those inputs so it's not me assuming I know what's right, but actually we're working the bureaus and offices to understand that. But I hope over the next course of the next year, we'll have demonstrable sort of modular successes that move us forward that the public can see, that our partners can see. We obviously have a lot to do with the FCC website, that we can actually get that input so that people can actually see that they're actually getting input into it. I do think, again, with virtual desktop and doing bring your own device to work, that may not be progressive for the private sector, but for the public sector, that's still a big leap forward. Thinking about if we can use box.com for our sort of cloud storage, that's also a step forward. So it's probably going to be, the best word to say is, we won't do disruptions because that's too big, but we'll do a series of interruptions that begin to actually change how we've been perceived in the past of lagging behind, hopefully be going forward. And it's going to be a network effect. It's not just going to be me. It's going to be the entire network of the FCC doing it.
What does the future hold for information technology within the Federal Communications Commission? We will ask its CIO, David Bray, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.